News of the enemy withdrawal, brought back to Mardonius where he waited with the infantry, was soon confirmed for him, as the sun rose, by the dramatic evidence of his own eyes. The fragmentation of the Greek battle line, the task that he had set himself from the start of the campaign, had been spectacularly achieved. Most gratifying of all, the supposedly invincible, iron-souled Spartans were in open retreat, isolated from their allies and as vulnerable as they would ever be. Risky, of course, to engage a phalanx in open battle, especially a Spartan phalanx, but Mardonius knew that he would never have a better chance to tear out the heart of the allied army. He gave the elite squads of infantry massed around him the fateful order to advance. They began to wade through the shallows of the Asopus. As they did so, all along the Persian battle line, banners were raised amid great cheering, and every unit in Mardonius's army, moving in disordered eagerness, whether it was with the general's permission or not, surged forwards down the river bank. And now, as the haze of dawn glimmered and was burnt up by the rising sun, there shuddered through the Lacedaemonian ranks that dense, bristling glitter of shields and spears and helmets, which had always served to alert warriors that a time of slaughter was approaching, and that the gods themselves were near. From beside the temple grove, where he had ordered his men to halt and prepare for battle, Pausanias could see Amompharetus and his division retreating uphill with measured discipline, even as the Persian horsemen, massing behind them, came wheeling in pursuit. Pausanias had heard the savage cries of the barbarians from the river, and then watched them cross it in a monstrous, banner-swept tide. He knew that soon not only cavalry, but the whole weight of Mardonius's elite infantry battalions would be assaulting his shield wall. Frantically, while he still had the chance, he sent a messenger to the Athenians, begging them to join him, but the message arrived too late. Even as Aristeides turned and began leading his men crabwise towards the Lacedaemonian positions, he felt the earth shaking and saw over his shoulder the battle line of the Thebans drawing down upon them. The clash of the two phalanxes rang across the battlefield and confirmed Pausanias, a mile away to the east, in all his apprehensions of the worst. True, there was some relief to be had in the breathless arrival of Amompharetus and his men, but there could be no hope now of any other reinforcements coming to swell the phalanx's numbers. Alone, then, the Spartans and the Tegeans would have to face Mardonius, 11,500 men against the elite of a superpower. Already, fired by the wheeling, darting Sarka, arrows were rattling down upon their shield wall. Then, from behind the horsemen, barely visible through the hail of missiles, and all the more terrifying for it, the measured, thunderous approach of the barbarians' crack infantry divisions could be felt. Mardonius's cavalry withdrew. His infantry, maintaining their distance from the bristling phalanx, planted a wall of wicker shields. The rain of arrows began to thicken. Still, the cornered Greeks maintained their discipline. Holding up their shields, they listened from within their helmets to the eerily dimmed hiss and thud of ceaseless missiles all about them. Men began to stumble and fall, the arrows protruding from groins or shoulders bloodied to the fletching. And now, every Lacedaemonian and Tegean began to think, was the time for the phalanx to make its charge across no man's land, to crash into the wall of flimsy wicker, to stab and trample its tormentors underfoot.